Coming up on Ibogaine Uncovered.
Yes, iboga can be intense, but it's also so many other things. Iboga wants to highlight and showcase and like hold you in your truth, hold you in your creativity, hold you in your love, hold you in your passion. What is it that lights you up? What is it that inspires you? What work do you want to do? What relationships do you want to resolve? So it really wants to showcase the beautiful journey that you've been on as well. And so I like to say that iboga shows us the dark, the light, and everything in between. It's quite comical. It's a very cheeky,
really fun
sense
of
humor. Yeah, big time. People, we often hear them laughing on the mattress. And
like, you can't write some of the shit this medicine says. It's just... And it's like a one-liner, kind of like a soft baseball bat to the, you know, like, hello, this is so obvious.
Yeah.
My name is Amanda Siebert, and you're listening to Ibogaine Uncovered, the podcast that explores the impact of one of the most powerful psychedelic medicines on the planet. Can Ibogaine really get to the root of our trauma? Join me as I ask practitioners, patients, researchers, and specialists about their experiences. Welcome back to Ibogaine Uncovered. I'm your host, Amanda Siebert, and in this episode, I speak with Anthony Esposito and Amber Antonelli. Anthony and Amber are the co-founders of Awaken Your Soul, an iboga retreat center in Costa Rica. Both Anthony and Amber are Bwiti initiates and iboga providers who have been working with the medicine for quite some time. Over a decade for Anthony and about 8 years for Amber, who also serves as the chief of the village at the center, which is situated on nearly 100 acres of lush jungle. At the center of our discussion today is the reputation of iboga. Is this medicine as intense as people say it is, or is there more to it? We talk about the different factors that might influence the intensity of an iboga experience, such as dose, set and setting, facilitation, and how resistance might play into intensity. Amber talks about the importance of being trauma-informed when working with iboga, and she unpacks what that phrase really means. Something that people love to talk about when it comes to plant medicine is whether a particular medicine is either masculine or feminine. Anthony provides some context to his idea of whether or not iboga is masculine or feminine. We also talk about the shifting spiritual awareness of people who are seeking out iboga, and who makes a good candidate for an iboga retreat like Awaken Your Soul. Critically, we talk about how the iboga experience differs from the Ibogaine experience, things like how the medicine is administered, set and setting, music, and we talk about how to deal with resistance when it arises in guests. Finally, Anthony and Amber share some of their own lessons from the medicine, which they've carried with them from Gabon to Costa Rica. Iboga is often described as intense. This is why many people refer to it as the Mount Everest of psychedelics. As Anthony and Amber explain, while there are certainly elements of iboga that can be quite intense, there are several factors that can impact that intensity. We hear that when it comes to iboga, a small dose goes a long way, and that feelings of resistance can actually turn up the dial on intensity. Anthony and Amber dive into some of the key differences between iboga and ibogaine, not just in the way that they're administered, but also when it comes to why someone may seek out one medicine over the other. They hone in on the importance of meeting people where they are at, wherever that might be on their journey, even if it's deep in a state of resistance. And they share vulnerable moments from their own path as Bwiti initiates and iboga providers. Welcome to Ibogaine Uncovered. Amber and Anthony, thank you so much for joining me today from Costa Rica. How are you guys both doing today?
Good. Excited to be welcomed here. Excited to explore this topic a bit.
Same here. I'm doing really well. You in the middle of the jungle here in Costa Rica, so it's hard not to be good.
Love that. We're going to talk a little bit about iboga. Now, you've both answered the call of this medicine. You've both made pilgrimages to Gabon. So you're very familiar with this idea that iboga is a powerful intense medicine. It's often referred to as the Mount Everest of psychedelics. I know some people prefer Kilimanjaro because this medicine comes from Africa. But because of this, it has this reputation for being very long, very intense. Now, having so much experience with this medicine, what are your thoughts on this reputation?
There's no doubt about it that Iboga is, we believe, probably one of the most, if not the most powerful psychedelic healers. Now, it doesn't always have to be intense, and it isn't always psychedelic, but really where that intensity for me exemplifies is in its ability to heal so many different things in one ceremony. For example, really taking us down into the root of who we are and helping us remove the filters that are in the way of seeing ourselves and our lives more clearly, the amount that can be removed or taken from the unconscious to the conscious in just one ceremony is nothing short of miraculous. And then the integration piece is very deep with this medicine. So, you know, one retreat, which is two ceremonies, can really incur massive shifts in someone's life, more so than any other medicine we've seen. We've worked with a lot of other medicines personally. Now, it can definitely be intense under the effects of it. And I'm sure Anthony can speak to that in a minute. But I feel that that reputation is more appropriate in how deep it can take you for how much you can receive on the other side of it.
Yeah, in my experience, Iboga, it is the universe. In one of my first journeys with Iboga, almost 11 years ago, I was taken to my version of the beginning of time. And then I was, in the next breath, I was shown like the universe today with all the joy, the suffering, the pain, just everything. And so when I feel Iboga, when I connect to it, it's infinite wisdom. It's infinite expansion of consciousness. And it is wise. Some of the indigenous people in Gabon will say that the spirit of Iboga knows all the other plants. And in the beginning, when I first heard that, I was like, no. And then over time, as I developed a relationship with it, I absolutely believe that. How expansive, how infinite the wisdom is, how deep it goes within a person, right? It's the root of the tree. So it just seems like it's getting deeper and deeper into our roots. And as far as the intensity, I like to just connect to life as a whole. And I think that life as a whole, without ingesting any medicine, at times can be intense. You know, if we resist the universe, if we resist what is, we resist the flow of the river, and we keep saying, no, I don't want that to happen, then we feel the intensity of the universe. And then the moment that we take a deep breath, and we soften our bodies, then that intensity dissolves. And such as being on the medicine. You know, if the medicine is showing somebody something that can be uncomfortable, but they're embracing it and being with it, then there's less intensity. If they're fighting with it and resisting it and struggling with it, then the intensity can increase.
That makes a lot of sense that resisting would bring that up. And I love the way that you talk about Iboga as the universe. Of course, something like that would be intense.
Right.
Yeah. We had a guest here last week that just, his reality got rearranged and he was so in the flow with it. He was completely inviting of everything that was coming through. And the first ceremony was a lot about, you know, hit all of his coping strategies and behavior patterns under a magnifying glass, like just so clear. And that can be really intense. But if you're like, oh my God, this is so healing. This is so incredible to see this part of myself so that I have a choice in how I engage with my life after this, you know, because when we're blind and when we're numb, you know, we don't know. But when we know, then we have the ability to consciously choose more often than not, right? Not always, of course, we go on autopilot, but he could have resisted that experience very easily. And he was just so grateful to the medicine for highlighting to him the areas of his life that weren't working. And so that is a perfect example of being in flow with what the medicine is showing versus completely resisting every piece of it, because he really would have suffered a lot.
This idea of resistance playing into the intensity makes a lot of sense. I'm curious about other factors that influence the intensity of experience. So how important are things like dose, set and setting, facilitation? Can these things affect the intensity of an experience as well? Have you seen that in your work?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
One of the other things with Iboga is there's a lot of ancestral clearing and energy. And so who knows what we've come into the world with? Thank you, may blessings and a lot of gratitude for our ancestors to pave the way to get us here. But I would imagine that we carry some of that energy. And because Iboga is the root, it has an ancestral way of healing, that could be intense as well, as we're just moving energies that we're just unaware of. As far as dosage, that's a really important one that I love to talk about, because I'm always so dialed in with the person's energy field and their frequency, their behaviors. Are they anxious? Are they not anxious? Just really feeling their vibration, because this is not a one size fits all. You know, I know it's some, maybe the Ibogaine clinics that do it by body weight, but not here. It's really about feel. And we see a little bit of medicine go a really long way. We're not hesitant or shy to lean into people if that's what they want. You know, it just all depends. Some people want to go really deep. And we've given people an initiation dose here. Not many. And that means that you just take as much medicine, keep taking it until your body says no mas. And we're not trained to perform initiation ceremony, but we've given people an initiation dose. But I would say on average, 2 to 3 doses is probably the average. But yeah, the more medicine you take, the stronger it gets. And with Iboga, once you hit a plateau, if you take more, it just goes longer and longer and longer.
Okay, yeah, so this is like the Bwiti ceremonies that we hear about that go on for days and days. That's where that originates.
Correct. Like my first initiation was an all-night
affair. In Gabon.
My first initiation in Gabon was an all-night affair from 9 o'clock till 10, 11 in the morning when they closed the ceremony. But I was up for 3 days processing. Wow. I couldn't go to sleep. I felt okay.
But you weren't at resistance.
I wasn't struggling. There was nights that I would just be sitting outside in the temple by myself and everybody else was sleeping. Everybody's sensitivity is different. And I think for me in that experience, there was like a really deep healing of my central nervous system. And I just felt alive. I felt empowered. I felt aware, alert, and I felt really strong. And so it was a really beautiful experience for 3 full nights. Yeah.
Important piece to highlight about this medicine is that there's absolutely no doubt that it lasts longer than pretty much any other plant out there or animal teacher. And that, of course, can equal intensity. So if, you know, you take the medicine at 10 o'clock at night, the ceremony night, usually people sleep the following night.
Here in Costa Rica.
Yeah, which kind of marks the completion, quote unquote, of that particular experience, right? The integration, like the next, there's still a lot of wisdom coming, but sleep is when the medicine really starts to settle. Some people get sleep on discovery day, not many, but some people are up the entire following night because there's so much information coming through that the medicine's like, well, it's not time for sleeping yet. So that definitely has contributed to its earning the reputation. His experience in the initiation is that was an initiation dose. And we do get that here sometimes. 3 nights, not typically.
But 2 nights. We've had two nights for sure.
This fellow that I was mentioning earlier was not getting a lot of sleep, but he was surrendered to it. He was like actually inspired and excited by what was coming through in the nights when maybe he would have been sleeping otherwise. So that can elevate the intensity. You know, physical experiences and deep purging. Sometimes this medicine needs to bypass the psychedelic or more mental realm in favor of clearing out the body. You know, we have a lot of information stored in our body. And as humans, we're very mind oriented, right? So we want to quantify all of these, all the experience or all of the effectiveness, efficacy in our mind. And sometimes it's just a full body reset that we need. And so there's a lot of space created by a really physical experience, and that can make it intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to really highlight for the collective that it's not a competition in terms of how much medicine you take. Like, it's a little bit goes a long way. I've given somebody a half a spoon. I've given somebody 10. Like, it doesn't matter how much you take. And oftentimes people come in and they're anxious. They have some fear. They're hesitant. They're just, they're walking into the unknown. And we want to meet them where they're at. So just getting a little bit of medicine in the body so they can feel the spirit of the medicine, they can feel the vibration of the medicine, and then little by little, we can always add more. Also, yes, Iboga can be intense, but it's also so many other things. Iboga wants to highlight and showcase and like hold you in your truth, hold you in your creativity, hold you in your love, hold you in your passion. What is it that lights you up? What is it that inspires you? What work do you want to do? What relationships do you want to resolve? So it really wants to showcase the beautiful journey that you've been on as well. And so I like to say that Iboga shows us the dark, the light, and everything in between. It's quite comical. It's a very cheeky
really sense of humor.
Yeah, big time. People, we often hear them laughing on the mattress. And
like, you can't write some of the shit this medicine says. It's just... And it's like a one-liner, kind of like a soft baseball bat to the, you know, like, hello, this is so obvious.
Yeah.
Hmm. So it's that's funny.
I think probably to close that question would be about the setting. You said the set and setting, and, you know, the set meaning people's mindset. What mindset are they coming in with? Are they coming in with that this is their last resort? This medicine has to save the day for them. Are they coming in with this notion that the only way that they can heal is if they get hit over the head? And some people really do work that way in on their journey, is that they really need that type of intensity. Or people coming in with an openness and a willingness and ability just to fine tune and up level, or a soft, compassionate curiosity. You know, how we come to anything really is how we come to this medicine. So that's a piece. And then
the environment,
the space that we hold here is... it's really beautiful. It's very compassionate. It's very inclusive, accepting, non-judgmental. We have a lot of beautiful other wellness modalities like yoga and meditation and breath work and energy, trauma, body release, sound healing, art therapy, holistic food. You know, we do one-on-one sessions with people, group integration circles. It's a really well-rounded experience. And then we're highly trauma-informed. And that's a word that gets kind of irritating because it's everywhere, trauma, and like people claiming to be trauma-informed, which a lot of people are. I'm not suggesting that they're not, but what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm.
That means that you can see the wound beneath the behavior, and that you can meet people in that wound, and then not to push them further than they're really ready to go. And in fact, blasting them open with a ton of medicine and really pushing their face into their trauma can actually re-traumatize people. Out of a group of 8 to 10 people, everybody is going to be in a different space. And it's not a one-size-fits-all with the dosage. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach with how we hold a container for people. Some people are really ready and willing to look, and we help drive them into that if they want to go there. And if people are just not there yet, our job is to help them feel open, to feel safe, for their nervous system to calm, for them to feel ready to be open and vulnerable. And they may never have experienced that in their life. So it might take people some more time, whereas others are like ready and willing to hit it hard. And so that's, I think, one of our specialties here is meeting people where they are.
Thank you so much for that important note on being trauma-informed. And I really appreciate that definition as well. I think that's such an important thing, especially when you're dealing with a medicine that can crack you open and expose you to things that you might have not been in touch with for many years or even ever. I want to continue on this point on setting, because Anthony, you described to me an experience that you've had with Iboga where you've witnessed the energy of it shift from the time you first experienced, pardon me, from working with it in Gabon to now working with it in Costa Rica, from the sort of more intense energy that we've been talking about to one that's a little bit more feminine. Now, this is something people love to debate about plant medicine. Is it masculine? Is it feminine? Is it both? So I'm going to pose that question to you. In your experience, how does iboga present? And is it setting-based? Is it masculine or feminine? What's your take on that?
Yeah. So I think the setting, for sure, this environment where we're doing it, like this land, the actual land, the physical land, all the jungle, all the mountains, the river, has a really feminine vibration, actually, quite powerful. In the iboga ceremony, the spirit of the medicine wants a fire and the river. We have both. So this environment helps to absorb and move the energy, which is quite amazing and necessary. From the other environments that I experienced iboga in the beginning, it was very masculine. There was a lot of men around the medicine. It was very hard, especially the misoko witi. It's one of the branches of witi, and it's very masculine. It's very hard. It's beautiful in many ways. And I saw early on that the medicine wanted more feminine energy around the medicine, more of an expansive, lighter, nurturing vibration around iboga.
Compassion.
Compassion. Yes, compassion. That's a big one. And so over time, I started feeling the shift of the medicine within me. Because in the beginning, I was very like, I got to do this. I got to heal. I'm really strong. And even when I served the medicine after 4 years of training, I was giving larger doses to people than I am today, like the average, because I felt that people needed it strong like I had it. And I learned about maybe 6 years ago, the medicine clearly said, lower the ceiling, softer. And so the way that we carry the medicine and the way that we pray to the medicine, we often pray Grandma Iboga, Grandfather Iboga, like we're praying to both energies, both spirit within the medicine, Iboga Buddha. We pray a lot to Buddha and Iboga connecting and being one. And yeah, it's just the way that we hold it with a lot of love and a lot of compassion has softened the vibration. Because I would imagine you can go to a different retreat in Costa Rica and the energy of the medicine and the whole facility will be different than what Awakening Your Soul is. And not saying that that's wrong, it just might be more masculine. Whereas I believe, I feel that we are more feminine in our approach to working with iboga.
Mm. Yeah, and that's not to say, I think, I don't know that I would say more feminine. Yeah. I would say more in balance. Mm. I would say more empowered in both roles rather than forcing and fixing and shoving. And the compassion piece can exist in the masculine as well, right? And our holistic approach as well is not really being done with this medicine. And it's not a bad thing. We work with a lot of rituals from the Bwiti tradition, and we have allowed our work with this medicine to be informed mostly by iboga. And so we have a blend, and there's other places that serve the medicine in a very traditional way, which is beautiful and has its place. And it just really depends on the environment that people are looking for. Neither is better or worse than the other. This is just how the medicine speaks through us. And that feels really authentic for us. And that softens the edges. I think it's really important to note that healing really happens in the vulnerability. Whether we can be, you know, vulnerable within ourselves or vulnerable with the environment around us, or hopefully both. And that is something that a lot of us have not ever had in our lives, is the space to feel safe, to be accepted and received just as we are, to allow our nervous system to settle and to open. And that is really, I would say, our deepest mission here, is to help people feel loved unconditionally. Mm. And that is the resounding message that we get from people, is how loved and how safe they feel. And that in and of itself, without even taking any medicine, is the medicine. That's the healing.
What a beautiful thing that must be to witness in people over and over and over again, that even without the medicine, you're able to create the space for them to accept themselves, to be in touch with the part of themselves that they can come to love and cherish. And wow, that's so incredible.
It's incredible. And we see, like, people arrive here and then 24 hours later is the first ceremony. Sometimes people come in and they're nervous, which I think is a very healthy emotion to have. It's reverence for the experience. But then when they land here and get a tour of the property, a welcome ceremony, some nutritious food, they get a good night's sleep, and by the time the next day comes, they're already feeling better, and they haven't even taken the medicine. They're in nature, they're in the river, they're talking with other guests, they're talking with us.
They're being cared for by people.
Exactly. And so it's already working without even taking it, to your point.
Yeah. Very cool.
And we love what we do so much. It's just, it's not a job. It's a
way of life.
It's a way of life. And we receive so much healing from it. So let's not pretend that it's just for the people that we're only in service. It's a reciprocity for sure.
That's right.
But what we do is so effortless. And so many people often come here, oh, this must be so such hard work, holding space for all these crazy people and all of our stuff. And it's not, honestly. It feels just, it's effortless. And the work comes in what we are required to do within ourselves as carriers of this medicine, not the space that we create for other people.
That's right. It only gets hard for us if we're not willing to look at something within us. If we're not willing to take responsibility for whatever it is in our lives, then that's
still...
Then you get your ass kicked. I mean, we've experienced that, so we know. And the moment that we just are with what is and we're just trusting and going with the flow, then yes, the work is effortless, actually.
From what I've heard, that element of ass kicking is very characteristic of Iboga, but I love that this work feeds your soul so much. That's so cool.
It is so cool. Well, it just doesn't miss. Mm-hmm. It's a hunter, and it just doesn't miss whatever it's looking for inside of us, like it knows. So yeah, it's a really beautiful teaching that I call it the greatest hunter for the truth inside of us.
I love that. Amber, the last time we spoke, you mentioned that people who are coming to this medicine seem to have more awareness about it than they did even 5 years ago when you opened Awaken Your Soul. Why do you think that is?
I would say actually what I was pointing to is that the level of consciousness of the guests that are coming is higher. And the level of consciousness in humanity at large is up-leveling for sure. With respect to this medicine, it's been known for many years, decades even, in the detox community. That's really where it started to become more well-known in the 70s and 80s was with, well, Iboga initially, but isolating the one alkaloid into ibogaine to address opiate withdrawal. And that's where a lot of the traction was gained with this medicine. And they're very different. Iboga is the full root. It's the full spirit. Ibogaine has a really beautiful place in the world and in maybe the addiction, especially the detox community. Not necessarily addiction, because Iboga can also, not only can it physically detox someone, but it can address addictive patterns. Because again, it's not the behavior, it's what is the pain that's driving the behavior. But in terms of active addiction, where the body really needs an interrupt, that's where ibogaine comes in. But because of that sort of jumping off point for Iboga in the Western world, it has attracted more of that community. But little by little, you know, over the last 10, 11 years since we've been working with this medicine, we're not seeing as many people just on the other side of a detox like we were. We're seeing people that have done an enormous amount of work. And it doesn't matter. We like, people are welcome regardless of what stage of their awareness they're in. But we're just finding organically that the people that are coming have done a lot of work. They've done a lot of other medicines. They've done a lot of other expanded state exploration, vipassanas, meditation, physical cleanses, breath work. There's just so many beautiful tools that are not necessarily psychedelic. And yeah, we're just finding that people's level of awareness about themselves, their behaviors, their traumas, their beauty, their bliss, their calling is just at a new level.
So since we're on the topic of people visiting Awaken Your Soul, I'd love to know a bit more about why people are deciding to visit. Now, obviously, with a medicine like Iboga, certain considerations have to be taken into account. Anthony, you mentioned to me that you're responsible for intake and screening. When it comes to that process, who would you say makes a good candidate for a retreat like yours?
Yeah, I would say people that are willing to look. People that are really willing to look. And oftentimes people come and they say they've done a tremendous amount of work, but there's just a little piece here, a little piece there, and they're looking for more inspiration, they're looking for more connection to self, to nature. And people that are just willing to take responsibility of their lives. And we don't, like Amber said, we don't work with detoxifying people. So people coming here are not on any pharmaceuticals, not on any street drugs. Maybe they're taking SSRIs or anxiety medication, but they would wean off of that before they come. And it's really a call that people are receiving. They're just receiving this really deep call. Every time an inquiry comes in, this medicine's been calling me for a year, 3 years, 1 month. Oftentimes I speak to people that contacted us 3 years ago and just weren't ready to make the jump. And eventually after 3 years, they were ready. And people that are looking to understand their anxiety, they're looking to understand why do they feel depressed? Why do they feel disconnected? Why are they not feeling empowered? Maybe their mind is running amok where they're in these vicious loops or these vicious cycles, and they keep recreating the same outcome that's not getting them anywhere. And so there is some stuckness, I think, with people that are coming to Avoga that want to just get unstuck and just move the energy, whatever is holding them back.
And people to really understand the level of commitment that this medicine demands, actually. And if you're not ready to do the type of integration that this medicine really asks for, then it's just not the right time. And Anthony's really skilled at cutting through the fat and seeing when people are not ready. And also when people get here, you know, there's varying levels of ability to show up for what the medicine is presenting. Like I highlighted with that gentleman that was here last week, he was ready. The whole group actually was very, very ready. And then sometimes we get people that are just like, just resistant. And that doesn't mean the medicine's not it's going to work at the level it needs to work for them, but maybe they're not fully, fully ready. And you never really know ultimately until you dive in, and that's okay. Nothing has gone wrong. It's perfect. It's just as it is.
So it sounds like a combination of people looking for better ways to deal with potential mental health issues. Maybe they want to up level spiritually. Maybe they're dealing with some kind of block in their life.
I would think it's pretty common with all the medicines, why people go to ayahuasca, why they go to psilocybin, why they go to what peyote. It's very similar with Avoga. Yes, it has the detox portion, but there's a tremendous amount more than just getting physically scrubbed.
It's all of these medicines want to reconnect us to our true essence. I think that's the intention of all of them, whether it's a plant or an animal teacher, or even synthesized in a lab, ultimately, you know, with MDMA and LSD, is really to connect us deeper to truth, right? The route to get there is going to be different with every medicine. And they're all beautiful for trauma, PTSD, addressing addiction issues, which are typically tied into trauma and PTSD, discovering more love in our hearts, more joy, more creativity. They all work in all of those categories, I believe.
Yeah.
But the reason that Avoga is so skillful is because it's a root. And metaphorically speaking, it takes you into the root of who you are to help us see our deep programs, our early life experiences, and how we construct our reality and our beliefs about ourselves and the world in defense, so that we can feel safe when we're small. And so there's a lot of inner child work being done. And that, you know, this can be kind of a cheesy term, and I resisted it for a very long time. But this medicine over the last 8 years as a facilitator has taught me time and time and time and time and time again that there's a lot of wisdom in that. And to Anthony's point with the ancestral karmas, that also is impacting our early life experiences. And so there's this string of behavior patterns and belief systems and energies when I've like looked at epigenetics, or just specifically the way that we get on in our relationships and our household in our younger lives, like that dictates how our adult life unfolds. Now there's other factors, you know, cosmology, what is our astrology? What is our human design? What is our soul's path? There's a lot of different things that contribute, but I believe that they're all tied into one, that our early childhood is decided by us based on our karmic path, based off of our human design. Like all of these things fit together. And the more that we can understand what makes us tick as adults, typically tying us back to our early life, the easier it is to learn to interact with our life in a new way, which is what Iboga is just so skilled at.
I love that you brought in this concept of the root. You know, a fun fact, an early version of this podcast was called Root Medicine, just because, you know, it's so, it really gets right in there. And so I think that's an important thing to remember. I think my favorite way to explain Iboga and Ibogaine to someone who's completely unfamiliar is bringing in that element of the root. And then they're really, it brings in a different level of understanding.
The presence of Iboga, how it teaches us to be present. Mm-hmm. We're always telling our guests, take your shoes off, put your feet on the earth, because Iboga is teaching us presence, lots of presence, out of the mind, out of this loop, and come back to the body, come back to the feet on the earth, the connection to Pachamama. It's incredible how Iboga brings us to the present, like always. If you're aware, you can just see and feel your mind going somewhere else, and you just come back and be present.
Another little interesting fact about Iboga is that if you take the external skin off of the seed, it actually looks like a brain.
Yeah.
And
this
medicine is, we call it a mind medicine. So it's a truth medicine and it's a mind medicine. And it really does go in and defrag the hard drive. So not only is it emptying the files and cleaning space and rewiring thought patterns, it's literally scrubbing the brain. I mean, we hear reports time and time again of people feeling like seeing a visual of actually the medicine going in and ripping out all the files. Files are flying everywhere, or like little men in there scrubbing the channels of the brain. And then it works on rewiring the neural pathways, regenerating the neural pathways. And that is a really potent reset in how we think and feel and behave.
Yeah.
Can attest.
Nice benefit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice benefit.
So since this podcast is called Ibogaine Uncovered, I have to ask the obvious question. Now, most listeners will know that Ibogaine is administered in a more medical setting, typically solo. How does the Iboga experience differ? And I guess what I'm looking for here is like, how is the medicine administered? How big is the group? How long does it take? Are people sitting? Are they laying down? Maybe you can paint a picture for me.
Part of I feel the most magical part of this process of healing is when we can actually heal in community. I also hesitate to use the word healing because really it's just a remembering who we are and also just a learning and growing, not indicating that we're broken. And there's that word gets thrown around a lot. I use it a lot. We use it a lot. I'm really just working on shifting that because it really isn't about becoming unbroken. It's not about putting all the pieces back together. It's about really ultimately remembering who we are and allowing ourselves to be at peace with parts of ourselves that maybe we would consider, quote, broken. But being in this type of environment, in a communal setting with brothers and sisters that we can trust and open up to and feel vulnerable with, sometimes even more so within a 24-hour period than we have with other relationships that we've had our entire lives, that's a really beautiful piece of this work. And it's a very ceremonial setting. There's a lot of ritual. We receive the medicine at the altar. And of course, it's a varying dosage, either being served in a powdered root bark form, so like a sawdust consistency, or a tea. We start the ceremony around a fire, which is really powerful, sharing intentions, torching with a beautiful torch called the Mapeto, clearing the energy, calling in the ancestors, speaking intentions. And then the majority of the night is on the mattress with a blindfold, but we're in a temple. We're outdoors under cover. Yeah, candles lit everywhere. Fire's on. We're right next to the natural spring-fed pool. It's a beautiful body of water. We're out in the middle of this vibrant jungle, and traditional music is playing, sometimes live, sometimes recorded with Mavyango, Gabonese Ganga. That is just newly come to work at our center. We'll play some live music, but some of it is live recorded in Gabon. And so the entire night is spent on the mattress. And we also do something really beautiful and somewhat unique to this medicine, I would say, or at least initially, is a guided journey, somewhat like psychedelic assisted therapy that people are doing with psilocybin and MDMA now. But this method has been used for many years, centuries of, which is to guide people on a life review, guide them into their body to do physical healing, guide them up to the moon to visit ancestors or other loved ones in their life to have a dialogue and some healing or some connection and expansion. And so that can happen throughout the night if someone is interested. And then the following day, 6 a.m. or when it becomes light is when we close the sacred ceremonial space. And then the discovery day is actually a really powerful day. And I'll share a bit about that.
As far as the discovery day, that's the day after ceremony. It's a really beautiful, powerful day. We actually collect the phones of our participants before they take the medicine the night before, because we don't want them jumping on their phone and making big life decisions.
Or surfing YouTube.
Yeah, surfing YouTube. And so the next day, the medicine is settling more and more into the body. It's more and more grounding into the body. Some of the chaos from the night before has simmered. And the medicine is getting more dialed in. It's getting more precision. So there's journaling, again, feet on the earth, getting a massage, moving the energy. And we really coach people and support people to just stay present with what is. Maybe lay down, maybe have a little meal, but really just be present with whatever the medicine is sharing. And all of the facilitation is always available. So if somebody wants to explore something that the medicine is showing them, then we can, remember, sat for two and a half hours with one guest on discovery day, just exploring, going deeper and deeper, myself as well, and our other facilitation staff, because it's just more manageable for the most part. And sometimes people are still deep in it, and we just need to hold them at that level as well.
I imagine the discovery day also, I love the way that's referred to at Awaken Your Soul, because sometimes in the Ibogaine space, they refer to the day after medicine as the gray day. And so discovery for me sounds like, oh, this is, I don't know, there's a little bit more of a positive twist on that than gray day. I think that's
So much insight happening, and people can sometimes be a little disappointed maybe if they come out of the ceremony and they're not feeling like they made the progress that they wanted to make. And it's coming. Even in the days after the integration day or in the following night where there's no ceremony, but the medicine sometimes can reactivate in the evening.
I'd like to jump back to something that we talked about earlier, which is this idea of resistance. So I think it's natural for people pursuing any sort of psychedelic experience to come in with a bit of anxiety, but resistance, I think, is a little bit different. So what happens when people are resistant to the journey that Iboga wants to take them on? And when that happens, how are you as facilitators meeting them where they're at?
Typically people are saying it's not working, right? I often say, whatever you think the ceremony is going to be like, it's not. So whatever your mind is thinking that this medicine is going to be like, it's just not. And so sometimes people are wanting a light show and all these visuals, and that's not happening. And so they're resisting what is actually happening, but they're focused on something else, like a visual or this light show. And they're missing, like, the medicine, the spirit of the medicine is sitting right by them, just waiting for them to get present with what is. So oftentimes we see that. Sometimes if the medicine's taking them into a part of their childhood or part of their journey that maybe is intense or difficult to look at, they might be resisting, saying, no, I don't want to go there. That's not where I want to go. And yeah, we check on the participants a number of times throughout the evening just to check in, to see how they're doing, what is coming up for you. And if that's a situation where they start sharing with us that, you know, the medicine is bringing me to this place in my life and I'm just not ready to go there, then we could just be with them and help them breathe. And sometimes it opens it up where they might feel a bit more comfortable to actually go in.
The piece about the medicine not working, or it's not working in the way that they might expect or want it to, is actually resistance to what is being shown in the moment. And often what is being shown in that moment is Iboga is amplifying the way that they are criticizing, evaluating, they're a perfectionist, they're looking for something outside of what's actually happening in order to feel validated or fulfilled. And chances are that's showing up in their regular life all the time. So Iboga is turning up the dial on that. And this happens, this is a very common way that Iboga teaches, which is to amplify our anger, our fear, our depression, our judgment, our self-loathing. And so much in a way that maybe there are no visuals, maybe there isn't anything happening clearly from the perspective of, oh, this isn't a psychedelic experience, or I'm not getting all these downloads. But really what's happening is the medicine is moving all of this energy, not only to highlight under a magnifying glass. Look, buddy, look at the way that you're talking to yourself on a regular basis. Iboga has taken that from a, maybe it's at a level 8. Now it's at a level 20 and you're thinking it's not working. Whereas actually what it's doing is not only showing you what is running below the program constantly, but also it's amplifying the energy so that it can clear out. And so if that's happening and we're feeling anger, we're feeling depression, we're feeling anxiety, and we're like, I don't want to feel this way. This is horrible. I can't wait for this to be over. I just want to sleep. That is resistance. And so meeting people in that space, sometimes time is the only thing. Like sometimes our words can't penetrate. And trying to explain to people how this medicine is working when they've never come through the other side fully, there's a lot of trust that's built when you come out the other side. When someone's in their first ceremony and they don't understand that and they're at resistance, sometimes words don't matter. But sometimes we can reach people and they can go, huh, okay, well, isn't that interesting? I can see the ways in which I am allowing my fear to project out, and I'm attaching and catastrophizing, creating all of these scenarios. This medicine's not going to work. My partner's going to leave me, whatever it may be. And they can bring themselves back into the moment and bring themselves into trust in the medicine and gratitude and reverence for the experience and knowing that they will come through it, because there's no way around it. The only way out is through the process. And so the more that we can be with whatever is present, the more we can learn, the softer it'll be, and the faster it will actually move.
This notion of not having this need to change or fix things, the note that time sometimes is the only thing that's going to fix that, I think that's really important for people to hear, because everybody wants to know, how do I get over this resistance? What's the shortcut? Sometimes there is no shortcut.
And in life in general, I don't think there is a shortcut. There's a lot of hacks out there these days, but I don't know. I don't think we can be anywhere other than where we're at. And the more surrendered we can be to that piece, whether it's in a medicine ceremony or in life in general, the softer the process is going to be. And that seems to be like unavoidable, really any capacity in life. If we're going to go to school to become a doctor, an integrative doctor, for example, or an Iboga provider, or a podcast host, or, you know, a personal trainer, the fastest route to being able to do that is not necessarily the best, right? Mm-hmm. Like the more experience we have along the path of learning, the richer the learning is going to be in any category.
Now, you're both Wheatie initiates. You've gone through the intense work that it takes to be able to serve this medicine. What are some of the most profound lessons that you've carried with you from Gabon to Costa Rica? What has this medicine taught you?
It's a good question. I was just reflecting on my first initiation that happened 10 years ago. During that process, my eyes were open, you know, we were in the temple, and so it wasn't eyes closed with a blindfold on like it is here in Costa Rica with the psycho-spiritual journey. So you're very aware there's a lot of outside stimuli. So it's really difficult to go inward in that experience, right? Because you're very alert, you're very aware, you just your senses are heightened. And so it was really the aftermath. It was the integration process after Gabon when the medicine really started settling in, things started speeding up, like things that I wanted to manifest, things that I was writing in my journals started to happen at a really rapid pace. I feel like in my initiation, my central nervous system was being worked on. Like I had a lot of anxiety in my life. And after that initiation, I didn't really notice that actually until about 6 months, 8 months after the initiation, that I was just feeling more calm. I was feeling more grounded. I felt more connected. I felt more empowered. You know, Boga and that experience, it's a warrior-like. And in the beginning, it was really hard warrior. And now for me, it's a soft, loving warrior. And also for me personally, that initiation was also teaching me and giving me the confidence and courage that I can hold this medicine. Because oftentimes in my apprenticeship and my training, I doubted myself. I doubted my ability to show up and do this work at a really high level. And that was just my own insecurity, my own fear. And Iboga and my soul helped me tremendously with grounding into my creativity, my passion, my way, and trusting that I know what I'm doing to this point. There's a lot more to learn, but I have a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom to share with the people.
My initiation, very similar in the sense that...
It was so colorful.
Oh, it was very colorful. just very similar in the sense that the awarenesses and the teachings and the shifts are not clear in the beginning. I was very sick in my initiation and came to find out almost immediately upon our return home that I was actually pregnant at the time. So I don't really...
Yeah.
I don't
surprise.
Surprise. I don't have any idea how much that contributed to how sick I got. I mean, we do say that sometimes when people have walls up and they're not really ready to go where the medicine can take them, maybe psychologically, but emotionally, that the medicine will start to remove blockages in the body. And I went to my initiation. I was very walled off. I was very guarded. I had a lot happening in life at that time. And I was not very open and ready to receive, partially the environment I did it in, I was not feeling safe in. So there's a lot of contributing factors. So was it that I was pregnant? Sure, possibly. There was definitely a contributing factor there. But I think it was also what I was just mentioning, that I just was very protected. And so I got sicker than I've ever been. And it took a very long time to integrate what that all meant. And for me, there was a lot of personal empowerment that came from that. There was a lot of permission to trust my own inner guidance system. It helped clear the way for me to be a mother, not only of Luna, who came in August of the following year. It helped me clear the way for me to be a mother of Awaken Your Soul. And that's something that I'm still consistently embodying on a day-to-day. There's times when I have not been the most kind or compassionate mother. Certainly maybe with the guests, yes, but behind the scenes with our staff. And so that's been a really big rite of passage for me and a huge integrative piece of what I've learned from this medicine. But I would ultimately say that my initiation with this medicine came in opening this retreat. And the level of work that has been demanded of us by this medicine on a day-to-day basis, you know, the thread starting in Gabon. I was initiated 3 months before we moved here to open Awaken Your Soul officially. Like, we'd done a lot of retreats together prior. I worked in another center, but to open this space and what the medicine has required of us in this 5-year process, almost to the day, is just, it's deeper than any initiation in a finite period of time could ever be. And I hesitate to say this, but it feels like we're through that most of the heavy lifting. I really hope that I'm not.
It's true.
But it's been a lot. And, you know, a lot of people that know our story, like, we've been through a lot. And it's been incredibly beautiful, incredibly confronting, very expansive, a lot of contraction, but a lot of coming through with really pure, unadulterated reverence and dedication for the work that we do within ourselves and the space that we hold. for guests. So I would say the initiation has still been going. And I finally feel like I can say, it's time to take a deep breath.
Wow. Thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing that. I can imagine how profound an experience that must be to go through a boga initiation while your body and mind are also preparing you to become a mother.
Yeah. Three super potent experiences, being initiated, opening an iboga retreat, and becoming a parent within 3 months of one another was
moving, yeah.
And moving to Costa Rica, selling all of our things, renting out our home. Yeah. It was, an initiation of the highest order. All of them would have been independently, but all of them merging together has been colorful, as Anthony said.
Colorful. That's why. Colorful. Yeah. One day, hopefully you get a chance to meet Luna. Of course, she's our daughter, so she's so special to us, but there's something there with her.
She's been initiated.
You know, and in the tradition, I understand, when a woman is in the first trimester, they bring them into the temple and they do a ceremony to initiate the fetus. So
incredible.
We did it. Wow. We didn't plan to do it.
But this girl's a force.
Bet. Wow. What an incredible experience. Anthony, Amber, thank you both so much for joining me today. We've had such a wonderful, robust conversation about this powerful medicine and your deep experiences with it. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing your wisdom to the show. Really appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for all the beautiful work that you're doing as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your curiosity and creating these platforms for people to do this work fully and responsibly and the holistic approach that you have yourself. So we honor that deeply.
Thank you. The more you know, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much. Take good care, guys. You've been listening to Ibogaine Uncovered. If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe on Spotify and Apple, leave a review, or share it with your friends. This podcast is brought to you by Beyond and produced by Eamon Armstrong, mixed by Trevor Coulter, and edited by Ariel Villafane. Beyond is the world's premier network of medically based Ibogaine treatment facilities for addiction, depression, anxiety, and PTSD. Beyond's mission is to help people end chemical and behavioral dependency and to end the suicide epidemic with psychotherapeutic treatment and psychedelic plant medicine innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It does not constitute medical advice and does not necessarily reflect Beyond's views on mental health treatment or personal development. For inquiries and further information, please visit beyondibogaine.com and make an inquiry using the web form or email Beyond at hello@beyondibogaine.com.